Hello and welcome back to the FI Talk podcast. I'm your host, Pa, and I'm joined by my good friend, Mr. AJ. We're here. Have a very special guest today. I will let AJ do the introduction. But before moving any further, I will just go ahead and hand it to my guy over here. AJ, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good today. We're so excited to have a special guest here on the podcast. This special guest is living actually in another continent. So we are so pumped to learn a lot about the financial system and things that we don't know in Europe. So we're so excited. We're so pumped. This is going to be a special episode, and this is going to be very near and dear to some of our audience who actually live in Europe. You know,
right.
if you remember, you know, Europe, our top four countries that listen to us, two of them are from Europe.
Yes, so that's true.
This is going to be really, really, really good. But before we get, before we bring our guests on the podcast, how's your weekend going?
Weekend, as you know, we're recording on a Saturday, so weekend just pretty much getting started. Been running around the whole day today, and got some other things planned for the rest of the weekend. So really, really excited about it. And we're getting actually a little bit of snow down here. You know, I mean, snow is not something that usually, you know, happens around here that much, but you know, the past 2 weeks, you know, we've gotten quite a bit. So, you know, I'm really excited. Yep. And I didn't tell you this, but next weekend we're gonna be going to Leavenworth. You know, you remember that trip that you made with your family when you guys went to Leavenworth and then spent some time in Wenatchee.
Yep.
You know, so we're going to be doing the same thing. So next weekend, you know, we're going to be going there and getting some more snow, and hopefully we'll do some sledding, you know, and all of that kind of stuff, you know. So I'm looking forward to that.
That sounds exciting. Leavenworth is just a nice little town.
Exactly. Yep. You know, but I'm really excited about today's episode because of the fact that, like, when you stay in the U.S., I mean, it seems like, you know, they don't want to expose you to any other countries, you know, financial system, health system, you know, they just don't want you to know anything about any other country. All you know is just the U.S., you know, but I am glad that, you know, you were able to reach out to our guest and she, you know, agrees to come to kind of tell us a little bit more about the European system, you know, how their, you know, retirement systems work, you know, and all of these kind of things. So I am so pumped and really excited.
Yeah, our special guest, she's a very close friend of my little sister, and they used to come over to the house. They went to elementary school together. She is a personal finance enthusiast like we are, but she's also a psychologist. And with that, we welcome our guest all the way from UK, Oli Chongan. Welcome to the show, Oli.
Thank you, AJ. Thank you, Pa.
Before we get started, Oli, I know we've known each other for a very, very long time, and we're friends on Facebook. You're friends with my wife, but I follow you on Facebook, and I see a lot of stuff about this World Cup. Now we're recording on a Saturday, and the World Cup finals, I think it's tomorrow, right?
AJ, what do you mean you think? It is tomorrow.
It's usually on a Sunday.
Dude, I've been dreaming about that World Cup final for the past 3 nights. It's tomorrow, of course.
So I saw a dilemma at some point when you had two countries that you love dear to your heart playing each other. How did that go?
So it was Senegal versus England. Uh-huh. So what happens is, although I'm Gambian, my dad is Senegalese, and I've lived in England more than I lived in Gambia now. Yeah. So yeah, I've lived in England than any other country my whole life. I will support England any day or whatever comes, but this day it just happened that on that day they were playing against my dad's country. So it was it was a very tough decision to make. In the end, like they say, you just follow your heart. So I had to support England. And then I had my cousins on there who didn't talk to me for the night because I couldn't hide it. I was like, goal, We scored. Yes, we won. Then didn't talk to me for like the rest of the night. And in the morning, I just had to call them with my head hung like, how are you doing? And they're like, we've seen what you've done. It's okay. And even my mom was like, how dare you? I was supporting Senegal. You know, it was a whole lot of banter. But yeah, that's football. It's England are the people I know. They're the team, you know, the team. You've seen the boys grow. You cannot just support any other team if you watch them develop. So you kind of you have like vested interests. So yeah. And it was a bittersweet win, but it was a nice win still.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Well, I was also, you know, watching that game. I've always been a lifelong England fan since 1990. I was a very young kid when they went to the World Cup, and I was watching them at that time. And I would say when they played against Cameroon in the quarterfinals of that World Cup in 1990, I was supporting England. So that's how big of a fan I was, you know, of England. But when they played Senegal this year, I love Senegal, you know, so I just had to support Senegal, you know, but, you know, I knew that England was better, you know, but, you know, it was a good game and I really enjoyed it. You know, this is a financial independence podcast, but we are out here, you know, talking sports. It's only because we are right in the middle of the World Cup and she stays in England. Everybody knows how it is in England over there. You know, football is it's like a religion there. And they have the real football over there. But yes, I mean, since we are still in the topic of football, I mean, you are in England. Yeah. Can you tell me if you are into the Premier League? Do you have a soccer team there that you root for? Or what's the deal with that?
So I think I was just saying this a few minutes ago. So because I work for our National Health Service, and the way our health service is divided is that whichever borough, like local area you work in, kind of like the football teams, they kind of like very invested in this country. So one of the hospitals I actually was working in, Arsenal Stadium was just on the other street, next door. Like literally when we had the footballs, we had to close the road. So at the end of the day, Arsenal Football Club really does a whole lot for my hospitals. So I'm really grateful to them, I must say, on this podcast, because they do a whole lot. Like one year, they opened their stadium for us to do our annual general meeting. They sponsored it all, the food everywhere, the niceness. And also for my mental health patients, every weekend, I think it's on a Saturday actually, of every last Saturday of the month or something, they open the stadium that they could go there, escorted, they could play games. If they were interested, there's like a grassroots thing that they sponsor. They put in a lot of money in our hospitals.
So is this the old Arsenal Stadium Highbury? Yeah. Or is it
the
new
one? That's the old one.
Oh, yeah. Highbury. Okay.
Yeah. But okay. Even though they're gone, they still got like the sponsorship continued for for our mental health patients, which I'm really grateful for. So like I like to say, they're my team number two. But
you just got all my Arsenal friends so excited, and now you're just letting them down saying that they are number two. Oh my gosh.
Yes, because
I have two good
understand.
Friends who are Arsenal fans. They're gonna be so, so disappointed. All right, I'll let you go with your number one team.
Yeah, so they're my number two. If I were watching football any other day and they're not playing, the only team they could play against, and I'm gonna support that team, is Chelsea. Because football is about love, and you can explain why you choose a team.
Did you say Liverpool?
No. You heard what he said.
I thought I heard you say Liverpool.
I clearly said blue and it's in London.
Oh, I thought you said red and it's in Liverpool.
I clearly said the poshest team in London, which is Chelsea.
All right. I'll let you have that.
My brother supports Liverpool, though. Pa, can I just make a quick observation?
Uh-huh.
I think you are the young person who supports Liverpool. Why?
I've heard a lot of people tell
people
me that,
I know who support
you know,
Liverpool.
Yes, most of my friends tell me
all
that,
the
you know,
I know who support Liverpool.
That's what most of my friends tell me, that you support the old man team, you know, Liverpool is like old man team, you know, but I don't really care, you know, I've always supported Liverpool since I was like, you know, 11, 12 years old, you know, but it is true. You know, most of the fans are much older, because those were the days when Liverpool was really good back in the 70s and the 80s, you know, but
exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
So here's the thing, though. Most people support like 4 or 5 teams in England. And what happens to the rest of the teams? Because there's like, what, 20 in the first division or something?
But believe me, you will be surprised, AJ. You'll be surprised. For them, most of them, it's a family thing, actually. You'll be surprised. Yeah. Like, I have friends who support West Ham. Guess why? Because their dad and their granddad supported West Ham. So that's how serious football is in this country. Right. It's a family thing. Like, your family was supporting this team. You continue to support it. And they also buy seasonal tickets. Mm. Like, seasonal ticket is something very big to inherit in this country. Like, if somebody passes away, like, yeah, your children take it and your children's children. Because it's so hard to get a football ticket in this country. You have to have connections. That's how. And it's one of the most expensive things. So they're seasonal ticket holders, their family legacies, and they support a team. So it runs in that family.
Awesome.
That's how it is. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, cool. All right. Well,
you guys are not really rivals, right? Liverpool and Chelsea.
Liverpool and Chelsea. Ah,
we are not, you know, I mean, we have other people that we hate more than Chelsea. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, we hate Man United. You know,
they don't see eye to eye.
Yeah, we hate Everton, you know, but Chelsea, I think Chelsea is not far from Arsenal and West Ham. All those teams not in London, right?
Yeah. So those are the London teams.
The London
teams. When we play in here, we get the derby when we play in London. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we can talk about
it. It's quite far. I've been there like a few years ago. It's very far, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully I can convince you to.
Very
you
know, far from London.
Hopefully I can convince you to change your allegiance. You know, to
no chance. You
know? But anyway, you know, that was really good. You know, I'm always excited to talk about my soccer. You know, and I'm such a big sports fan. And you know, this World Cup has been nothing but great. And I'm looking forward to the finals tomorrow. And I hope that my boy Messi, you know, will get his flowers tomorrow. Hopefully,
oh, dear.
Yeah. So
I'm supporting all right, AJ. France.
Oh, you are?
AJ, I'm supporting France. Yeah, AJ, who are you supporting?
I think I'll be in the middle.
You're in the middle.
All right, AJ, take it over.
Let's just get started with. We don't have any questions really, but it's just a conversation. We're just trying to understand and also bring more awareness of the financial systems that are very different from what we have here in the United States. And some are actually really, really good. They have really good benefits, health benefits, and all that stuff in other countries. We just wanted to bring you on, Oli, to kind of like touch on what is it like working, earning money, making money, spending money, saving money, and trying to build wealth in the United Kingdoms.
Thank you, AJ. First of all, I would say to begin with, quite different from the US. And the reason I say that is because, like yourselves, I have started out by listening to some American financial gurus like the Dave Ramsey's, I bought his book. I then went on to read, there's the other guy, is his name Ramit, something like that?
Yeah, Ramit Sethi.
That's the guy, I read his book. But the issue I then had was I could only read and understand and be able to apply some of the basic personal finance advices they gave, but not fully. Reason being, over here in the UK, two things would be different. One, our pension system is very different from yours. Second, things that we save and budget for, like maybe healthcare, as you guys would save for over there, is not something that would necessarily concern me in England because I am here, I live here, I got British papers. So I wouldn't be saving up for that because we got our National Health Service, which is the NHS, of which I am a part of which I work with. Secondly, the pension one as well. Oh, I do look, I've listened to so many of your financial gurus that now I can say things like 401k. That doesn't exist in the UK. If I say it, I don't have no idea what I'm talking about. I do know that I related to pension, but that's about it. So for example, for myself, my pension is a pension that is in my healthcare system, but kind of protected by the government as well, in addition. So I am sure there are similar principles, because when I read up on you guys' things and I look at my pension statement, it does say defined benefits. And then I listen to Dave Ramsey, it says something about, oh, you got to look at your match from your employer, this and that. So I run to look at my match, and I'm thinking, okay, it's probably because I work for like a government organization, I get this good like top-up rate from my employer. I pay in like a certain percentage, my employer pays in 20.7% extra. So for example, for where I work, in the healthcare system, one of the benefits that they use to lure people in to work in the NHS is the pension. Because we got like one of the best pensions in the country, and also is protected by the government. And it's at the end of every year, we get re-evaluation and inflation money added onto our pension every single year. So it's kind of like that. You're not doing it by yourself. You know, it's guaranteed. You only do a certain number of years, and you should be set for life. Secondly, when it comes to life insurance, pension is my life insurance. For example, if I were to pass away now, I do see that in America, I hear you guys as well talk a lot about that, about how you do your life insurance. So if I were to die now, my workplace is going to be responsible for my insurance to my spouse and to my young children. So it's all of that is tied to my pension. So apparently, accordingly, they always say in our workplace that, because when I first started, I was at a young age, and then I had a manager saying, oh, I would rather get an agency temporarily that day to do the job and go. And I said to him, so why not the permanent person? He laughed and he said to me, Oli, because of pension, I got to pay their pension and I got to pay their insurance. Let me show you how. And then he showed me. I was a very young girl at the time, I think 22 or something. And it was from that day on, I was like, okay, so this is the way they're saying. Because at the time, the reason I was asking him that was that the going rate, the payment rate of that healthcare worker seemed to have been a bit more in monetary terms than the normal employee. And then he laughed at me and he's like, no, the permanent employer earns 10 times more than the than the temporary one. You just don't see it because you don't understand that behind the scenes, I'm paying insurance for that person, and behind the scenes, I'm paying their pension, which I have to match. So they are way more expensive. So that's how they lure us in. That's why I'm working for the government in that way. Reason being, if I work in the private sector with what I'm doing now, managing a unit, a mental health unit, maybe they will pay me twice as much I'm earning now. But if they paid me twice as much I'm earning now, I have to go and find my own pension now, which I would be confused about maybe to begin with. And number two, I don't have that triple lock protection. I don't have the triple lock protection that the government is offering.
What is the triple lock protection?
So the triple lock protection is something introduced by the government of England for sometimes public sector workers, including the NHS and all those who got like state pension benefit, which means that one, your money is protected. Two, your money is going to be all the time matched to the inflation rate. Yes. So we get that once we are inside this government working schemes.
Man, looks like a good plan right there.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. And so we in the United States had a lot of companies had pension back in, 40, 50 years ago. And they started to go away from the pension because then they would guarantee payments for this person for their entire life. And they started shifting that responsibility onto the employee by bringing what's called the 401k.
I see.
The 401k is kind of like not really a pension, but it's kind of saving, but it's up to the employee to do the initiative of saving, and then the employer would match it and then put the responsibility of the employee to take care of it and invest it and do all the work instead of them doing the work when it comes to pension. And then after that, you have outside, of your work, you know, contribution, like after tax or the Roth IRA and those kind of things that you guys don't have over there. But I still have some type of a pension, but we also have some type of a 401k. So for us, it's all three things. It's kind of like a three-legged stool.
Yeah.
Actually, four-legged stool, right, Pa? You know, it's like you got Social Security when you retire. You got if you have a pension, you have that. And then you got your 401k or 403b. And then you got your outside Roth. Things that you're Roth. Right. And then the things that you...
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Brokerages. So, like, how to go? Oli, so my question is, you know, based on what AJ just explained and what I listened from what you've said, do you have any hands-on involvement in your pension? Like, do you get to go in it and pick and choose the funds that you want to invest in and those kind of things?
So no, that is all taken care of for us, because the reason being, like I said, and they call it that way, they call it the safest method because they're not investing it.
Oh.
So for example, my NHS pension now is a pot that I pay into. And at the moment, what I'm paying into is probably paying the people who were NHS workers before me, and it's going to pay them for the rest of their life.
Okay.
So when my time comes, people working in the NHS will be paying me for the rest of my life. But it depends on how much I contributed and whether I joined or not. Just like AJ said, we do have other things as well. Like, we do have our state pension, which would be like equal to your social security or however it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But again, because we are like a democratic social nation, ours might be a bit more than someone's getting in the States, I'm sure. Because over here, they make it like, well, everybody should have a set amount of pay and something like that. There is that, and that is different from my pension. And yes, I would be entitled to that if it's still happening when I am 67 or whatever I retire. But this is my personal pension that I pay out of my paycheck every end of month. But like, to answer your question, I did check that out. One day I decided to check it out with my pension people. I say, how do they invest the NHS pension money, like what I'm paying now? Mm-hmm. No, they don't invest it. They use it to pay the people who were paying in the pension pot before me for the rest of their life. And if my time comes, they pay me for the rest of my life with all those other benefits, like adjusting it to inflation and all of these things. And also depending on how much I paid at the time is what money I would get. At the same time, I was thinking in my Gambian mind, hold on, what about if I put all this money and they say the NHS has one day broken down? No, you cannot lose because the government has protected it.
But so my follow-up question is that, okay, now they're doing all of these things for you and you have your separate social security on the side. Two-part question. So the first part is, do you know how much money is in there? Are you able to, you know, physically go in and see, okay, let's say I'm going to calculate it, you know, that I plan on retiring at 60, 68 or 62. So is there like a calculator that you can go to? So if I retire at 62, this is how much I'm going to get, you know?
Absolutely.
That's something?
A calculator.
Right.
Yeah, they even call it NHS pension calculator. There's a calculator that you can put in there. If you Googled it where you're sitting now, you can see it. It'll come up as NHS pension calculator.
Okay.
There's a calculator. There's a yearly pension report that they send to us. Every single person who's in the pension, every year they send you a pension report.
That's
of
good.
How much you got in your pot. Mm. That way you know what you're doing and so, how much you got. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that is the NHS account. So how about the Social Security account?
The Social Security account in England, you don't even need to. I think all you need to do is walk. It goes to everybody.
Okay, but everybody cannot get the same amount, right?
No. Everybody cannot get the same amount. You just have to qualify for a number of years that you do in your job, and then you're able to get the Social Security. People who didn't have jobs throughout their lifetime, they put on something called benefits.
Yes.
yeah, they just get their benefits and they continue to live like that. But people who were living, for example, I got colleagues now who work with me in the NHS and they don't pay into the NHS pension.
Mm-hmm.
So when they retire, their plan is they're going to get the state pension.
Okay. Okay.
Which is at the moment, I think, which is like not much, like £900 a month.
Okay.
So, and as they do put it up every year because they, right. they feel that £900 a month is maybe what you can use to live on. But mind you, in the UK, once you reach 65, that comes with a lot of benefits. You no longer pay for your transport. You pay part of your heating. You pay part of your so everything is like part. So once you hit 65, it comes with a lot of benefits. So all those benefits plus getting £900 on top of it is livable for some people.
That's not bad at all. So
that's not bad. Yeah.
Right.
But for example, because I'm paying on this pension, if I, for example, retire at such a high level and my pension pot is so full that I'm going to be making a lot, like let's say I'm going to be making £6,000 a month from my mm-hmm. pension mm-hmm. for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If that was the case, then because they say everybody is still entitled to state pension, I would still get that £6,000 plus the 900, but maybe at a reduced rate of the 900, because they will tell me, look, you got such a lot of money, right. they cap it somewhere. Yeah, right. Maybe instead of giving me 900, they'll give me 500, because they will be like, you got a private pension.
Okay, so.
So they cap it then, yeah.
Okay, so now the second part of my question is, you know,
yeah.
what happens if the inevitable happens, which is if you die, you know, how does the distribution of the payments go? I'm sure there's going to be some kind of beneficiary situation going on there. How does that work over there in the UK?
So that works by me naming somebody, putting their name down, that this person is my beneficiary. Mm-hmm. So that person, like they make it clear to us all the time, have you nominated somebody? Because if you haven't nominated somebody, then it means it will automatically go to your spouse. And sometimes you never know. Some people, like I've seen a case of somebody got married, got divorced, but still left the didn't put a nomination on there. And people were still saying they don't know whether the person wanted the money to go to that person because it's now their ex. But legally, they were tied together. So they had to give the person the money. So you can do two things. You can nominate your spouse. You can nominate your children. And it depends on their age. Or you can leave it open. And if you leave it open, then they're going to give it to either your spouse or your estate, whatever they call your estate. Mm-hmm. But I remember that clearly, they keep sending us reminders. Every single end of year, they keep sending us reminders. Have you nominated who you want to be your nominated person in case anything should happen? If you haven't, why haven't you done so? You know, keep encouraging people to do it. So that is how it is. And also, if you, like you said, if you passed away in service and you didn't get your pension, whoever your nominated member is going to get the money until they pass away. For me, the only issue I have, which I think shouldn't be an issue, it should be a plus, but it's just that human beings are curious and they want to do whatever they want to do, is that unlike you people, I've had friends tell me that they've taken money out of their 401k, which I know I wouldn't be doing. But just knowing that I had the opportunity is nice, but I don't have that with the NHS.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I cannot touch my money.
Right.
Once it's in. I cannot touch it unless I write to them and say I'm taking early retirement, which is going to come with a lot of penalties that it might not even work. Like, if I wanted to take an early retirement in my young age now, they're gonna cap it. Like, my money is not gonna grow with that compound mm-hmm. interest until 60 something, and they really frown upon it. They keep telling you that no, you can only take early retirement at a certain age. Are you sure you want to do it? It's gonna affect your money. You know, they're gonna tell you not to do it. Mm-hmm. But they have no right to stop you. But what I'm meaning is, like, you guys are flexible. You can I've seen people say that, oh, they took money. I've always listened to Dave, and somebody's calling and saying, well, if we took our money out of our 401k, and I'm thinking, okay, these people have that option. We don't have that option. Your money is locked in.
It might not be bad to not have that option.
Yeah.
Because you know how human nature is. You you know, you have that options, and then you mess with it, and then you, at the end of the day, you don't have much left in there. So it might not be bad to not have that option.
Yeah, I think they use a lot of methods to deter people from doing that. I think, and also the other method they use to stop you from also coming out in and out is that, I don't know they, whether it just technically happens that way or whether they did it that way. So for example, if I left the NHS pension now, if I am to join back tomorrow, I'm joining back on a different scheme. Like they call the schemes different things. Like when I first started in the NHS, it was a 1998 pension policy that was still running until the 2000s going in. And then later they're like, okay, we don't think we can support this now. It's too much benefits. All the money you had in there is locked in, because in that 1998 pension, you could retire at 60. And some people who had special mental health status officers, they could retire even at 55 and started withdrawing. So they said, okay, we think that with the way inflation and everything and the economy is going, we can no longer support this pension scheme, and we're no longer going to take people on this pension scheme. It's closed. So now we're going to have one called 2008. But the 2008 one, the benefits would be a bit less than the 1998. And then they went again when inflation and recession hit and whatever, they closed the 2008. Okay, now we're going to open one called the 2015. So if I were to stop my pension now, today, I would be worrying that, oh, if I were to join tomorrow, I will be on a scheme that's going to give me less benefits. So I wouldn't want to do that.
I see that these financial gurus are very, very similar. Because we have the same exact. So number one, you were talking about the penalties of having the option to withdraw. Over here, even if you withdraw from your 401k, you get penalized. You get to pay taxes and 10% penalty. So you get 10%, depending on how much you withdraw, it's a lot of money. Plus you got to pay taxes on your income tax, which could be range from anywhere from 10 to 35% based on your income. And then as I'm hearing you, they have these tiers also at the state level pension where I work. The first one was stopped in 1976. So if you didn't start working there since from 19 before 1976, you're not eligible for the first one. Then you got the first two. And then the people that started before 2008 have a little bit more benefit if they choose to retire early. And then people that started after 2008 don't have that. So I can kind of like see the similarities both here and over there as well.
Yeah, I think like you said, anything like on the older system is on the is going to be more beneficial, because I've known nurses who were working with me and they retired at 55, went on and do something. One of them is like, I'm an artist now, and things like that, because they had that mental, and that also was part of our NHS thing, mental health officer status, which they don't do anymore. Like you could retire at 55, live your life, have your pension. They don't do that anymore. They're not allowed to advertise to do that anymore. So once I started listening to Dave Ramsey, and you know how he says, organize your debts, baby step one, pay off, organize all your debts, baby step two, pay them all off, you know, do your emergency form, things like that. So I was following the baby steps, and you know how he said, stop paying on your pension?
Yes.
And then I was really serious about doing everything he said, according to the book and the letter. So I went to my pension department some years ago, and I said, I'm here to stop my pension. And the lady looks at back at me and like, are you kidding me? You're here to do what? I said, I'm here to stop my pension, because I just, you know, want all my money and everything. And then she was like, have a seat. After I talk to you, if you still decide to do it, then I'm going to do it for you, because, you know, you have your right. And then she was telling me all of these things, like, yes, you could do it. You could take your money, but you got to remember one. If you stop today, if you're coming back, you're no longer going to be on the 2008 one. You're going to be on a different section. Then she said to me, do you know how much tax you're saving by doing your pension? Because even if you stop paying in your pension right now, it doesn't mean you're going to get the exact same money you see coming out of your check going to your pension. because that means that would still be very taxed, and your tax, you wouldn't have a tax break because you're having a pension taken out. You have it. So she explained so many different things, and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna leave it. Continue. So then I went away. But I was really serious about, you know. Yeah, but he said to me, you might see a couple of hundreds coming out of your pension check, and you think, if I stop paying it, I can use those couple of pension hundreds to do whatever I want. She said to me, no, it's not going to work like that, because then that money will be taxed so much, and you will only be left with a little bit. So I thought, you know what? It's not worth it. Let me continue paying in. Yeah.
Yeah, I did have the same dilemma too when I was in baby step two. But where I work, there's no option to stop your pension. It's not an option. You cannot stop. It's just mandatory. When you start there, whatever you're putting into your pension, mandatory. You cannot stop it. You cannot change it. You cannot switch. You have 90 days to decide what you want. And once those 90 days are gone, if you don't decide, they'll put you in one bracket, and you cannot change it. There's no option to stop it. So I did have that dilemma as well, but you know, I didn't have the choice to even stop it. But you know, it still worked out that we were able to get out of the baby step too.
So what do you guys do when you switch jobs? Because here, I'm sure you've listened to some of our episodes. You know, when you switch jobs, you have all these options that, you know, you can do with your 401k. You know, you can either leave it at your previous employer, or you can cash it out, or you can transfer it to the new employer, or you can just go ahead and open a traditional thing and then just go ahead and put it there. So we have all these options that is at our disposal when we transfer jobs. What do you guys do with this strict pension that you guys have?
Let me say, lucky for me, I would say, I don't know if it's lucky or not, I have only ever had two jobs in the UK since I came. That was when I came as a teenager and I was working at Burger King. And then by the time I was 21, 22 is when I came to the NHS. So I have been with them. And lucky for me as well, I met an old guy at the HR who said to me, on my meager part-time going to college salary, he said to me, are you going to pay the pension? And I said, pay the pension for what? He said to me, because I have met kids like you and you don't pay the pension, and in 10 years' time, you're going to be 30. And in another 10 years' time, you're going to be 40. So why don't you start paying now? I said, I will think about it. I went home, called my dad, and he said, pay. I started paying into the NHS pension when I was 21.
Wow.
So I've still been with them. So I haven't changed jobs from the NHS, which is a body. I have changed jobs from a lot of hospitals, but it's all under one NHS pension. That's the good thing. So if I left here and go to Pa's favorite place in Liverpool, I will still have the same pension if I work in a hospital.
Right.
So that's how the England one works. But let me tell you, if I were to leave the NHS now and go work private, I have two options. I can either leave my pension in the NHS, or there are companies in the UK who specialize in getting your pension pots from whatever. Every time I put on the TV, they come on. Have you got different pension pots in different workplaces? Because they keep saying in the advert, they say the average person changes jobs every 5 years. Have you got pension pots all over the place? We specialize in bringing all those pots together for you with a fee. So there are some people doing that. So those two options. You can either leave it in that place, and when you retire, you get different payment options from different people, or you can use one of these agencies to do whatever they do to get all your money from different places.
Wow.
That's how it works, yeah. But for me, luckily, although I've worked in so many different hospitals going around, it's one NHS pension, so I didn't have to change. I got a unique number that just follows me around.
Man, I am intrigued, AJ. I don't know whether you are, but...
I am too.
Yeah, I am really intrigued with this whole UK system. I mean, it sounds very simple to me.
Right.
You know, compared to what we have over here. I mean, even though it's good to have, you know, a lot of choices like we do over here, but it just kind of overcomplicate things sometimes. You know, it seems like they have it very simple and that, you know, it's not as overly complicated as it is here.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, your money is just a tool to buy your time back. The thing is, it's definitely very simple, definitely very easy. And once you stick with the one job, But besides that pension, if you want to invest more, what does that look like? I know we have the stock market here, and I'm pretty sure you guys have the stock market in Europe, because one of my options is the foreign stocks, you know, yeah, which invest in Europe and other countries outside of the United States. Yeah. What does that look like for over there if you want to invest outside of your pension?
So I was going to talk on that because I listened to one of your podcasts, and it was, I think it was, if I remember it right, it was you, AJ, that was talking about starting out on the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you guys are doing in the US is exactly what I would do. And the reason I listened to that was that because it's exactly what Dave Ramsey would tell people living over there is what exactly I would look at and do. Over here, we have something called Nutmeg Investment. And Abu said another one. I can't remember because I was going to look into that. I can't remember off the top of my head now, but I was thinking about that. But over here, we have those things like Nutmeg and all these investment things. So whatever you guys are doing over there is what exactly I would do if I wanted to invest in the stock market with my own money.
I know Charles Schwab has the international person, and also Fidelity and Vanguard.
Fidelity is what you said. And that's
Fidelity and Vanguard have.
Yeah. So Nutmeg is something like Fidelity, but in the UK. So something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
Also, I just wanted to point out something because I picked up on what Pai is saying, and we don't know who's listening to the podcast. Our pensions are like that, but remember as well, I'm working for the government. It could be my friend who works for a private company.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how their pensions go ahead, but it's just that there's a lot of government work going on over here. But the private people, I know that it's advertised on TV that all the employees, like people in the supermarket, workers in the supermarket, the employees and everybody, now every employer is responsible for paying in like £1 for every £1 that you pay. So they're encouraging them like that as well. But whatever like supermarkets and other places do with their employees, I don't know how they invest their pension or whatever they do. And it's definitely not protected by the government, because we have had issues in the UK where companies have collapsed and people's pensions have gone. I'll never forget seeing people cry on TV. It has happened here.
Yeah, I think the reason that I have also got some type of a pension is I also work for the state, not for the federal government, but for the state of Washington government, and which me and Pai both work for. But Pai, you with a private company, do you guys have pension or just the 401k now?
We only have the 401k. So because you work in the healthcare industry, and all three of us do, my question, or what I needed, what I wanted to know, I'm sure you've heard about the U.S. and how our healthcare system is. We have Medicare here, we have Medicaid, and just Medicare alone, you have Part A, Part B, Part D. So complicated, really complicated. And the biggest expense here for most people is Medicare, and it's also the number one cause of bankruptcy in this country, you know, which is healthcare bills. You know, so healthcare here is so complicated. And the European system, I've studied some of them, you know, England, Germany, you know, and they are much better. But it's something here that we will consider a socialist system, you know.
Yes.
Right.
You're fully capitalist.
Exactly. But if you look at it, you know, it is much better for the society. So if you can just touch on how your healthcare system works there in terms of when people need it, and, you know, towards retirement and all of those kind of things, you know, compared to what we have over here, because I'm sure you do know a little bit about our system.
Yeah. So I would like to touch on that because of two reasons. One, I just want to say for us, like, let me use England in specific. Like you have explained now, Medicaid, is it?
Medicaid and Medicare, yes.
Like Medicare and insurance and whatever. So with us, forget all of that. There's no insurance here in the UK or whatever. It's like you get sick, you go to the healthcare, you get your, you all you have is everybody has a unique number. I'm sure you guys have. We have a unique NHS number for every single person who's born in the UK or who becomes British or has the right to be here. You go, this is your NHS number, PAM, you go do your operation or whatever you need to do, be it a minimal thing, be it a maximum thing that can cost £1 million. And that's it. You go home. Finito. No insurance, wow. No thing to fill or nothing. So they
you don't pay anything? No copay?
Yeah. No, nothing like that. There's nothing like that.
And can you imagine that? Man, I mean, that would have been great if we have that. I mean, healthcare here, you know, is a headache in this country.
So and you know what? There's a lot of people that are working because that's their only source of healthcare insurance is their job, and that's why they still keep working even though they're financially able to support their life but not healthcare.
For them, the system is the NHS was built by someone who said that it's called something from cradle to grave. From cradle to grave, every British citizen should be able to have healthcare, be them a rich man or a pauper. That's exactly his word. So be a poor man or a rich man, from the cradle to your grave, from when you are a baby to when you die, you shouldn't have to pay a single penny using the healthcare system, which is great. But let me tell you something. Do you know that if you guys did the same job as I'm doing in the UK now, you will earn double money than I do?
Why is that?
Because that's how we sponsor all of these things.
But
so it's not like
taxes?
It's coming out of town. Yeah. So okay. I have a friend who's a doctor. We went to Marina School together. Then she studied over here. And it so happened that she got married to a guy in the US and she moved. Do you know she earns 3 times more than her salary than she used to do in the UK now?
Okay.
Then she told me, however, what she doesn't like dealing with, which people over here tell them, is like she's they call them like insurance assistants, because she said to me while I was in the UK, all I had to do was be a doctor and mind my business. Over here, I'm running after insurance, which is so complicated that in the beginning it really comes. But I can tell you, a psychologist, probably somebody managing a mental health unit in the US, is earning 3 times more than I am in the UK.
But that is just a salary, you know. But if you look at your benefits and all the packages that you have, it's pretty comparable, you know, compared to you know, you get your salary, but now you have to worry about, you know, all these healthcare expenses, you know, and dealing with these insurance companies is a headache.
Last year, we started receiving something from our job called the Total Compensation Package. Which means that we're working. I think they started last year because there was a lot of people, employers were having a hard time keeping employees. Okay. So they want to show you exactly everything that they pay you. Yeah. So your total compensation, your salary could be, let's say your salary, for example, is 75,000. Your total compensation might be 150 because they pay your pension.
Yeah.
They pay into your healthcare.
Yeah.
They pay into your HSA. They pay Social Security, which your employer also pays part of your Social Security, exactly the same amount that you pay.
Yes, they do.
So they pay into Social Security. They pay, you know, all this stuff. And if you add all of those together, they call it the total compensation, which is way bigger than your salary alone that people always. So they wanted to show people how much you're actually making or worth rather than just what you see on your paycheck.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think for you guys, that would be, if they did that, that would be a big number because, you know, with the pension of 20% that your employer pays, plus all these health benefits and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah, there are benefits because I am able to live in this part of London, Regent's Park, because I work for the NHS and I work in this part of the city. There's no way I could have rented this place on my own. It's not going to happen. it's not going to happen that I would live in this part of London. So all of that is part of the thing. So they will give it to me at a reasonable price because I work for the healthcare. And there's a whole lot of discounts as well all over the place for if you work in the healthcare system in London. So when the paid package of if you, for example, if I live, like I live in London and I practice in London under the healthcare system, so I have like thousands of pounds package because I live in London because of inflation and whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you were also saying about transportation and utilities when you retire and all of those things probably come from your, you know, total compensation at the end of the day.
But it's just that when you compare it nowadays, like when I look at what my friend is earning now and she's here, I'm always like, oh my God, I'm earning so much less than you. And she said to me, well, and we did the same program. And she said to me, well, it's kind of like less hustle for you as well. You don't ever have to deal with insurance. Over here, do you know how insurance companies make their money for healthcare? There's not a lot of them, but there's some of them. So they make their money for healthcare by trying to get you an appointment earlier. So for example, God forbid, let's say if someone had a hip surgery or a knee surgery and you have NHS and you still have like private insurance, which a lot of people don't have here because what's the point? The only thing you will get from private insurance is in waiting for 1 month to go to your appointment, you can get your appointment in 1 week. So that's, that's the only thing that people would really pay insurance for. And I keep telling people, for mental health in England, please don't pay for insurance. They're taking your money. They're lying to you. They're going to bring you to us eventually. Or they're going to put you in wards. That there's no rush in mental health that it's not a surgery. They're not going to push you in the queue or something. Right. So every time I have like, we have like people come in and they're your people most of the time. They're the Americans. Working here, and if you work here, you get the benefit because you're working here. You get the benefit to use the NHS for free. But I don't know. Maybe it's a thing for because that's what they knew. They come here, they get insurance, and somebody has a mental health issue, and they take them all around the place, and then they eventually end up with us. And it's like, so your place is NHS. Oh my God, I should not have paid insurance. Why did I pay insurance? We're like, you have to learn that this is England. Don't do that. The only benefit you would have really is, those things like you needed a surgery and instead of waiting for 1 month, they can push you forward to, do it earlier. Or maybe let's say in extreme cases where you have like women and fertility. But then again, like I said, it's always about a week. You will eventually get it in the NHS if only you just hang on a little bit more. Because with the NHS, it's the fairness. Somebody was before you, you got to wait until that person goes ahead of you.
Right.
Yeah, but if you're paying for insurance, you can get it a bit earlier. So that's the only way. So over here, they do a really hard push of marketing because you have to sit down and think, why would I need insurance for healthcare? That's the only reason.
Man. Yeah. Whew, man, can you imagine that, AJ? I mean, in the US, the insurance companies are the most powerful companies in this country, and they have a big lobby in Washington, they get whatever they want, So I just cannot imagine that, they can get rid of insurance in this country and, the healthcare system will just be like the UK over there. I mean, that would just be, really, really catastrophic. that's what I would say. So the thing that I want to touch on, how to call it, Oli, is, I mean, because since we started, you've been talking about mental health, and this is something that's very, very serious and people are raising a lot of awareness when it comes to mental health now. In terms of sports also, there are a lot of leagues now who are implementing all these mental health policies because, I mean, it's a reality. I mean, people go through mental health issues. And if you are, in the age group that we are in now, once you turn 40, you start having, all these things that you're going through, some people call it midlife crisis, and all of these kind of things, you start realizing how important your mental health is. Tell me something about, the stuff that you do. What are some of the things that you see and how does that affect, like, let's say somebody like me or AJ, we're out here, trying to, get to financial independence and all of these things. How should we cater for our mental health to be able to get to that place where we want to get to?
I'm going to answer that question in two parts. I'm going to answer the question, your first question about what do I do? So I have my hands in a lot of different buckets. So in England, I manage a mental health specialist unit. I'm the manager of a crisis house, what we call a crisis house. So what it is that we have different levels of mental health facilities in the UK. One is like the PQ, which is the psychiatric intensive unit. Then we have, which is like people are locked up really because they have severe mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Then we have the acute, which is like, it could be intermediate or medium. Then we have the crisis houses, which is like people like me, you and AJ. So when people don't understand my job, sometimes they're like, oh, how are your patients? How are they doing? And they're like, you and me. I look after students. I look after accountants. I look after lawyers. Hmm. They come in because they're not under a mental health act. They're not detained. They come mm-hmm. there because either at the beginning of depression or even the COVID mm-hmm. or even somebody has death issues that is so much for them that they don't know what to do or even a divorce. Or the last time we had a lady who was supposed to get married and the boyfriend decided to come out of it 2 days later and she wanted to kill herself. And then that lady came to us and when she was better, she went back to her job. So we have different levels, and I run a unit that is that. That is what I do in England. In Gambia, however, I work with the UN under the International Organization of Migration, IOM. So last year, I was in Tankatanka for a whole month because they picked me to go because they wanted knowledge transfer of me teaching the staff over there what we do in UK in terms of best standard practices. So I was there teaching for a month and I enjoyed it a lot. It was lovely. And we did the interviews and everything. I think if you type my full name, Olimashi Chongan, that's what comes up. I also run an organization called
Better Talk. So for the people who don't know what Tankatanka is, can you just tell them what Tankatanka is?
So sadly, it is our only psychiatric unit in the Gambia. People like myself have been talking and shouting about we need to get different units, better units, different systems, like the tier system I was telling you in the UK. In Tankatanka, when I was there for a month, all types of diagnoses that we have in the Gambia, you get chucked in there. There's no separation. If I was depressed, AJ was psychotic, you had personality disorder, they will chuck us all in the same place, mm-hmm. which is not going to be able to cater for different needs. I do understand we're a developing country, and I do know that sometimes my expectations are high, and I am so passionate about what I do that I want it immediately. I do take into consideration England is a much richer country than Gambia, but I think still we could make shift with everything. Well, hands off, I have spoken to the minister, who was a lovely gentleman, and taken some of the things I've said on board with the directors as well. And the International Organization for Migration, they're doing wonders. When I went there, they were actually building the ward and not a different side of the, because Tankatanka is quite big. I don't know whether you and Abu had the chance to visit it. If you don't, if you haven't, you when you go to Gambia, please do.
I haven't visited it, but my sister, who was in nursing school, did part of her internship at Tankatanka. And that's how I found out that it's the new Kampama. You know,
it's the new Kampama. That's yeah. But to be
and
fair,
it's in the Burusubi area, right?
Yes, Burusubi area. When we were in high school, we got taken to Kampama. It was horrendous. I have mm-hmm. to salute them and give them that Tankatanka is like 10 times better than the old Kampama.
Oh, that's great.
It is spacious. It is in Kombo. There's plenty of fresh air. Well, obviously, they can do better. They can do better with a lot of other things. What, like I said to you, the UN is helping them build new facilities. And I think after I left, I've seen them opening it. So I think the job is done. So that is a plus. But really, please, the government need to do a lot more work in mental health when it comes to Gambia. So that is my Gambia side. The third thing I do in the UK is that the beginning of this month, I was selected by Goldsmiths University. And we have a project starting in January. This is for perinatal issues for women from Black and African origin, minorities. They want us to do some research and work on the project of postpartum depression. Like us, the women from African origins, they've noticed that in the UK, when people have their babies, it's mainly the white population who would ask for assistance if they're feeling depressed. Women from our background don't come out for asking for the help. And so that's what I'll be working on from January. This is alongside my job, though. Yeah, that's what I do in a nutshell. Yeah.
That's very interesting. I know that this is a money podcast, but at the end of the day, yes, your health and your money go hand in hand. And mental health is one of the biggest things that could actually ruin your financial health because of all kinds of things that could be going on, addiction and all this stuff that, you know, would ruin your finances while you're having mental health issues. So we all could use some help when it comes to mental health. Tell me something simple, because we also know that about the 80-20 rule, right? The 80-20 rule means 80% of what your results depend on 20% of what you do. Just, you know, just there's little things that you can do to have big impact, basically. Tell me, what are the little things that I can do that would have big impacts on my mental health? I know I watched some videos about yoga and meditation and all this stuff. What would you say? A few things that I could do that are easy that would have impact on my mental health.
So I would answer that question tying it to the second part of past question, because I think that was what Pa asked as well. So I would simply start by saying, when it comes to ourselves and when you're looking at those things to better the things, first of all, change the language from mental health to mental well-being.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, so when I'm on the ward and I'm dealing with people with psychosis and depression and everything, the people who have gone on the other side of the spectrum, okay, I'm dealing with mental health. When I'm dealing with me, you, and Pa, I want you to, first of all, change the language to a more positive one, make it mental well-being. So look at it as, what can I do to improve my mental well-being? And you said some things that you like the yoga and everything. But I think just even before we started coming onto this podcast, we were talking about something interesting about Pa saying, if Abu was so brilliant at childhood, because I went to elementary school with Abu, and I was saying, I'm going to say it in the podcast again, I was saying how he came like first in the Gambia or something like that. And Pa was saying, well, if Abu was so brilliant and he used to play football, he used to do this and that. And I did say that the more active you are in your life, the more we produce something called the feel-good hormones, to put it in simple terms. And the more you're able to do a lot more of things, achieve a lot more of goals, your goals in your life. For example, for myself, going to the gym is something, I'm not a physical person. Reason being, I got sickle cell trait. I haven't got the full-blown sickle cell. I got a trait, which means I might be always tired. But every time my routine is correct at the gym, or my swimming, it means I feel much happier. It means I achieve much more of my goals. So I always push myself to go and do this. And in fact, because of that, I have decided to, which is another benefit, because I work for the NHS, I have like discount, half, quarter of the price of the gym is what I pay. And it's a fully functioning one with a wall-sized swimming pool and everything. I decided to join the one next to my workplace because I know I am somebody who likes to just finish work. If I come back to my house, I'm not going to go out again and go to the gym. So I decided to cancel my subscription next to my house and did my subscription next to my workplace, because it means I take my gym gear with me. And once I finish work, I just walk to the gym and I do what I need to do. Every time my life is balanced is when I'm happily going to the gym two or three times a week and going about. So physical activity is linked to your mental health. Okay, we need to always remember that. Diet is linked to our mental health. So in the UK, once you start reaching end of your 30s or 40s, it is mandatory that even if you are not well, every 6 months or every single year, every patient is allocated a budget. You will go to your GP and you'll have a full test. So the last time I went, my cholesterol levels were up. Like that was last year. Before that, that was 2021 going to 2022. And my GP sat with me saying, why was that? We ticked up all the boxes. What was the culprit? Palm oil. I keep saying Ebe. like no man's business. So in the end, what did I do? I said,
yeah, super kanja, yes. You know, no.
He said that was it, and that week, that's what I did. So he had to repeat it another month, and when I went that month, it was okay. And he said the culprit was palm oil, which we eliminated. So our diet, we need to be really healthy. So what I do now, obviously, I still love my ebe. Whatever the amount of palm oil I was doing, I'm so conscious now, I'm doing half of that palm oil. And I'm reducing the amounts I cook ebe in the time this. Because I think for our diets, in the UK, they say two ethnicities, Black Africans and Asians.
Mm.
We have the diets that are either going to lead us to diabetes if we're not careful, or things like high cholesterol. So we got to be careful of that. I am lucky I don't like sugar, but then again, it's all the things that cause that turn to sugar, like our rice, our white rice. White rice, when you chew it and afterwards what happens, it turns into sugar in your body. So we have to be careful. Brown rice is not nice, but it is the stuff we should be using. So I think sometimes it's finding that balance. So for my bread, for example, at the moment, we have something here called that a company brought. It's called Best of Both Worlds. So they mix brown bread and the white bread. So I try to buy that because I don't like brown bread. It tastes funny to me. And then I'm like, oh, what am I going to do? I want to eat a bit healthy because the white bread is something else. So now I buy the mixture and see how far I can go with that. So I think it's little things like that we can tweak as we go along, because let's face it, we're not getting any younger. Once you hit past 35, you're going down the other way.
That
so
is true.
For my ladies, we love our ebe, we love our super kanja. But I'm not saying the whole point of it is don't stop it, but use half of the duty and see how you come out.
Yeah, the other day, Pa sent me this podcast episode that was kind of like talking about health. And honestly, it was pretty scary because of, you know, like I remember what they were talking about genetically. Was that salmon? Salmon that was genetically modified.
So they can make salmon. Yes.
They can make basically genetically modified salmon. And when they put that genetically modified salmon back into the ocean with regular salmon, natural salmon, the genetically modified salmon was eating the natural salmon.
You see?
Which was kind of like scary to see that. Yeah, with the beef and all this stuff that we eat, you know, we don't know. So, well, with Pa, you know, he doesn't have that issue because he's a vegan, you know. The other day we went out and he was like three couples and we were like, the couple in the middle, they're kind of like in between us and Pa. So we ordered the steak and, you know, they ordered the chicken and Pa ordered just the vegan. So it's kind of like, you know, we see this extreme, but hanging out with Pa brings awareness.
It's good influence. 10 years ago, I always thought that vegetarian food was tasteless. I don't know why. I just always thought, because maybe it was the way we were brought up.
Right.
Coming down the line now, I line at a Whole Foods maybe once a week or something, and I do enjoy it. I put my sauces on my potato or on my what, and I go. 10 years ago, I wouldn't have done that.
Yep.
So yeah, maybe once or twice I do that. Did you guys realize that the UK is more controlled in terms of foods and sugars than the US?
Yes.
So the government over here, they charge a lot of things on different things called, there's a lot of sugar tax in this country. So people always tell me this, if you test a Fanta in the UK and you test a Fanta anywhere else, maybe like, let's say Africa, Gambia, you will have half sugar. So over here, they do take health very seriously, like the sugar tax is everywhere. So your products are not even going to get into the UK if it reaches a certain level of amount of sugar.
Wow.
It's not even going to come in. And the GM foods as well are so controlled.
Wow. Man, you know what? Everything that you said just pretty much made my week, you know, because, I mean, you are touching all the right buttons for me, you know, because... Well, number one, you're talking about mental health, which this is something that I am really, really, really into now, because it just makes me scared. You know, I mean, I can lose my physical health, you know, I can lose my money, but I don't want to lose my brain. You know, I don't want to get to the point that I don't even know who I am anymore. I don't know who my kids are anymore. You know, and these are things that really make me scared. I have done a lot of research in, you know, things like Alzheimer's disease, you know, and all of these things. And I'm sure you see those kind of things, you know. So these are things that really, it scares the crap out of me. You know, it really does, you know, because I've worked in, you know, like how to facilities where I have dealt with these patients, you know, that it really scares me. And the fact that also, you know, you talked about exercise. You know, the main reason why I go exercise now is not for the physical benefits anymore. I work a very stressful job, which I deal with people, and people are complicated. So the moment I get home, I want to go to the gym because I need to clear my head. You know, so going to play basketball is a game that I love. I go 2 hours a day. Those 2 hours, you know, it helps me, you know, be mentally focused again. It helps me sleep better, you know, and these things, I'm sure you will agree that these are two ingredients that everybody needs in order to maintain good mental health, you know. So
especially the sleep part, I have to agree with you.
Exactly.
You know, we've had people come to our mental health units and sleep is one of the part of the care plan because they're not sleeping at home.
Exactly.
And once they start sleeping, things start getting better.
Exactly.
We underestimate it, but it's so important.
No, it's very, 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 very important. And the third part that you guys touched was the diet part. You know, this is the holy grail for me, you know, because this is something that I believe affects everything that we do. You know, what you put inside your body is what fuels you, you know, for the rest of the day. You know, so putting in the healthy stuff helps with your mental health, you know, helps with your sleep, helps with everything that you do. So I am really grateful that, you know, you are out here, you know, promoting these things, you know, talking about it. And you are somebody that is specialized in these things. And I think that people really need to listen, you know, to what you have to say in terms of, you know, some of the effects of mental health and all of these things. But my question is, because as you say, you know, you've been to Tanka Tanka, you know, you've seen all these groups of people being mixed together. You know, these people are having psychosis, you know, these people are having depression, these people. So what causes mental, like some of this mental health, you know, like back home, we just see people out there in the streets, you know, with no clothes, you know, dirty and all of these kind of things, you know, and it will be attributed to, you know, some kind of marabu. You know, it will be attributed to, you know, somebody was smoking a lot of weed, you know, and all of these things. I mean, these were the things that we know. But coming in the West here, we see, I mean, different forms of this mental health. You know, what are some of the causes of these things?
So some of the causes, like, let me just give it to you this way. Like when we study, when it asks you what really, for example, what causes mental health, let me give you a funny story. What causes two twins, identical, both of them smoke the same strain of weed, and one of them loses his head and the other one, nothing happens to him.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm. So they give you a case study like that. So genetic composition of different people. There's something called the blue gene. If you Google it afterwards, it could tell you some things. So genetic makeup of people can be different. What Park can, like maybe a drug that Park can use can have no effect on him. And I can use it because something was lying dormant in me, I use that drug and it triggers it, then my head messes up. While Park can use it and nothing happens to him. Mm-hmm. And you're not gonna know what is in your gene. Family history, for example. Some people get schizophrenia. It's in their family line. So when we have patients come to us, they come to us, and when we do the mental health assessments, what do we look at? We look at, is there, they got schizophrenia now. Was there any family history, any of their family members? Did they have it in the past? It could be in your genes, and you didn't take any drugs or anything. It's just that life dealt you that hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to you. Trauma as well. People can be normally fine and everything. Like for the women, I work in a women's specialist unit. People can get raped and from there they just lose their mind.
Hmm.
War, civil war. We have people over here, but they are from Congo, they are from Sierra Leone, they've seen all of these things. The military people, we have them. We have a veteran service. They go to war, they come back, and they're my friends because my brothers and my dad are all from the military.
Yeah.
But they're the hardest people for us to get into, because military men are tough men, and you want to come and talk to them about emotions, get out of here. It's the hardest group that you have to be able to penetrate. But once you get in there, because you never know what these people went through when they went to the war. So it's those things. There could be genetics, it could be in the family line, could be trauma from what in the past, it could be all of the things.
And I also heard too that some of these kids taking the back way, you know, once they make it to Europe, some of them go through a lot of mental health issues.
Yeah, so the organization, the UN organization, that the branch that's dealing with that is called the International Organization of Migration, IOM. So they were the ones that hired me to go to Tanka Tanka.
I see.
Although it was a Tanka Tanka project, they were the ones paying for it. So the UN have like dedicated a whole branch on this migration thing. That's how bad it is.
Wow.
And they're trying to control it all from all sides. Like in the Gambia, they're trying to set up businesses. They're trying to do everything to discourage this kid. And once they go, like Pai is saying, once they come back to the Gambia, traumatized. So under the IOM, although I went to do this training, and the IOM have employed psychiatrists. They've got psychologists in there. I met them when they went. So they're telling me about when these boys come back, the trauma that they've seen in sea. They go to sea for how many months? You could start hallucinating. And that's why when you talk to most of them, when they come back, they tell you they've seen this, they've seen that. But sometimes, I don't know, is whether they're seeing these gins in the sea. It's just that, imagine being in the sea for 3 months or something like that. You lose your head.
Yeah.
You know? So those journeys are brutal. I know Pa has asked me a lot of questions, and you guys have asked me about how to look after your mental health being and everything. Have you ever thought about what psychologists do? Because we take on all these problems of other people.
I think that's something that we haven't asked, AJ. I've taken a few psychology classes, you know, and stuff like that. But I mean, okay. So what do psychologists do? I would like to know.
So every single one of us have psychology sessions. That's what we do. So like I have every 2 weeks, I have psychology sessions with, it comes to my workplace and it does it for me and my staff. Imagine the stories we hear. Oh my God. And just like two weeks ago, I was in coroner's court. I was an expert witness. I was in court. It was hard. It was very difficult because you get cross-examined by a lawyer, because I went to court because somebody killed themselves. A mental health patient killed themselves, sadly, which we never want to happen in our units, but you never know what could happen. And the more I go up the ladder, in management, the more I have to go and represent my trust.
Right.
So it's a coroner's court, although it's not like a criminal court, it's a fact-finding court, but the family get to bring a lawyer and that lawyer got to cross-examine me. So where do you think I'm taking all of this? I have psychology sessions twice a month.
So these psychology sessions are for your own mental health well-being, right?
Yes. The psychologist, it's a psychologist whose training is specialized in working with people working in psychology. So when she comes, I too have to dump my thing on somebody else.
Yes, I'm why not? Yeah, absolutely. Let somebody else deal with it.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, because a lot of people swear by these psychology and therapy sessions. Definitely. A lot of people, more people could use stuff like that. We couldn't have had a better guest here, Pa. And I thought we were going to talk about pensions and the UK stock market. And here we are after an hour talking about more important stuff that deals with your well-being than just your financial stuff. You know,
I think everything that we've talked about here, you know, takes precedence over money, you know, because money, just like you always say, is just a tool. You know, but losing your mental health, I mean, this affects not just you only, it affects your entire family, you know, and I mean, some people never recover from these things, you know, so it does affect a lot of things. And I think, you know, the more we raise awareness about this mental well-being, you know, I think, you know, the better it is. I mean, because like, can you imagine, AJ, you know, we're out here, you know, trying to save all this money. And, you know, whilst we're on the journey, you know, something happens to, you know, either me, you, our spouses, our kids. I mean, it kind of derails the whole thing, you know?
Absolutely.
So yeah, I think it's very important, you know, to listen to, you know, people like her, you know, for, you know, just to gain more awareness of this whole mental well-being thing. And I am really excited. I mean, this is one of the best episodes that, you know, we've had that I have really, really, really connected with, you know, who we're talking to, you know, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I soaked in all this information as well. Definitely very, very, very Thank important, you. Very beneficial.
It's really nice talking to you guys as well, because I learn a lot of things from you guys, AJ, and when I listen to your podcast, because with the money thing, I'm not a finance student, so I don't know much. So I do listen to you guys and I take on a lot from that. So thank you guys as well.
Well, we listened to you today and you taught us a lot.
You know, absolutely. So. That's a whole lot. Before we go to the rapid fire questions, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with these questions that we ask our guests. Is there anything else you want to add before we jump into it?
I just wanted to add that I have found my UK guru match for my Dave Ramsey some few years ago, who is called Martin Lewis. He's the UK guy to go for finance and does the podcasts and everything over here.
Oh, nice.
And because of him and listening to him as well, I was able to kind of like, because over here they have like different stuff, like they have like accounts for if you're saving up for a mortgage, for example. Mm-hmm. They have like where the government are encouraging young people that, for example, if for every £100 you pay in, the government will give you £25 extra. But the reason people miss out on these things is because these things you can only apply when you're a certain age. After you're a certain age, you are no longer allowed. So listening to him made me to be able to open accounts like that on time before I missed the deadline. Yeah, so that's things great. Like that. So I am really glad that I found the UK version of my Dave Ramsey, although I love Dave Ramsey, but yeah.
Yeah, we all do. What's his name again? Yeah. What's his name?
His name is Martin Lewis, and his book is called The Money Diet. If you are in the UK and you wanted to know about money, you please find his book. And yeah, it did help me a lot, because otherwise I would have missed deadlines in opening like mm-hmm. ISA accounts and things like that. Because once you hit a certain age, they won't let you open it again.
Yeah, I guess we can go right into the rapid fire questions. I mean, these are just questions that, you know, these are just fun questions, Oli. So, you know, I'm sure you will enjoy it. So I'll let AJ get started.
Yeah, you talked about Martin Lewis's book and Dave Ramsey's book and Ramit Sethi's book. I would say, which one is your favorite? What's your favorite book?
Oh, I'm an avid reader. I read. I noticed that as I'm growing older, I'm going more into nonfiction. Mm-hmm. Because growing up, Sigar would know this, Abu's sister would know this. We went through the whole shebang of Sweet Valley High. Then I started reading my dad's books. My dad was an avid reader. So he mm-hmm. introduced me to this Sidney Sheldon. He introduced me to John Grisham. Mm. So I did do a lot of reading on that. But recently, like I said, as I'm growing older, I am more into the everyday and life lesson books. So recently, my most enjoyable person that I'm reading is actually an American. She is a judge, but she's an author. She's called Joyce Lintola. And she had a program called Divorce Court for a long time. But the program mm-hmm. is more about making marriages work, really, than getting people to get divorced. So because I find her so intelligent and the way she writes is so beautiful. So because she doesn't have a daughter, and I think she's about 68 now, and she doesn't have a daughter. She's recently written a book. She only has sons. So she's recently written a book called Dear Sonali, Letters to the Daughter I Never Had. And she said she just wanted to advise women in their 20s and 30s, but she never had a daughter. So she put it all in a book and put it out there for us, because she said in her courtroom, when girls of that age come and they're just talking about living together with men without getting married, not following their dreams in life. And here she is, she's a Black woman and she's a judge. She just wants to help the community. So that book has been my book of the year. It was so beautiful. Okay. It was full of advices from like a woman who is 60 something. It's a career woman. It's a Black woman. And I can look up to her. So that was really enjoyable for me.
Okay. Yeah. So the next question is, I'm not sure whether you guys use this term in England. It's here we say bucket list, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me two things that you have checked off your bucket list already and two things that you are looking forward to check off on your bucket list.
Let me start with two things that I'm planning to check off my bucket list. Obviously, one is going to Paris, because since I've been young, I just wanted to go to Paris.
But you are so close, though. I mean, you are so close to Paris.
I just didn't get around to it. Imagine I went all the way to Portugal and I didn't go to Paris. But maybe. Yeah. So obviously, going to Paris is going to be one of those things to do. The things that I have already checked off. I know, just the other day, I was thinking that, one of the things I wanted to check off, don't laugh because I'm a concert person. I wanted to see Celine Dion. And she came to the UK in 2019 and I got tickets and I went. I'll never forget that.
It just happened
that I got last minute tickets. Yeah, so
that's
one
beautiful.
Yeah, it was so beautiful. I just went. I still cannot believe that I actually did see her in concert. So
yeah.
That was something that every time I think about it, I'm like, okay. I really did do that and it happened for me. So that was one that I wanted to do and I check it. Listen, I don't know. Maybe this might not be some people's, my second one might not be some people's things, but I am kind of academic and I'm kind of, let's say, career oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was growing up, you know how they always say, when you're growing up in life, what do you want to be? What do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
And I always said, I wanted to be a teacher, and my dad would always say, make that a lecturer. So he would always be like, well, my daughter's going to be a lecturer. Obviously, I went this route and I became mental health. I worked in mental health and became a manager. What happened is I got called at the university and got involved in the, you know, the nursing students. They had OSCE examinations and I started doing the lectures. And now for my hospital, as the nurses in there, I am the lecturer of the medication manager. I just wish my dad was alive to say that I've taken that.
Definitely.
Besides my job, I did some lecturing. So
that is so beautiful. Cool.
Wow. I know. I'm pretty sure if he was, he's he's very, very proud of you for making that childhood dream.
Always wanted to be a lecturer. I don't know why. I don't know what I was going to do, but it kind of happened as part of the job. So that was something ticked off. Yeah.
Right, next question. What financial advice would you give to your 21-year-old self?
So to my 21-year-old self, I would say, well done. Don't be upset that you started the pension then when everyone else was having
it. Hey, that's great. That is absolutely
great. That is so good, man. I am so jealous.
That was so hard to do because it was such a meager salary.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people answer that question by saying that they should have done that. What
exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
I would say well done for that. But what else would be there? I would have said to them though, as part of advice, as you're going through the road, there would be banks offering you credit cards. Don't take it, not empty.
That's right.
I should have never done.
Oh wow.
Yeah, but I failed on that one. I took them and I had to pay the hard way. So I would have said, if you go along the line and the bank offer you all this money and you think it's so cool, don't take it.
Don't take it. Yep. Yeah, that's good advice.
We all been through that.
Yep. If kids are listening, you better hear what she said.
Don't take it.
So So my last question is, tell me who will be your favorite dinner guest, somebody that you will love to have dinner with. And if you are the one deciding the location, where will you take them? What restaurant will you take them?
I seem to like your American ladies. They teach me a lot.
Who?
I would have said Michelle Obama, but not on this occasion. This occasion, I would go with George Judy. I just like that woman.
George Judy.
Interesting. I like the way she's no nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't believe. I even have her as my screensaver. I just love that woman. So
wow.
Yeah. So I would have taken George Judy.
And where would you take her?
I would bring her to London. Actually, I think she would like that.
Okay.
And I'll take her to one of our posh restaurants that we go to in Camden. It's called Blue's Kitchen. And I think that woman can be in any situation. I can just see her. She doesn't care. Wow. I think she would enjoy it. Yeah.
That is
so
cool.
That is absolutely cool. Well, you probably have answered my last question with the credit card, but I would ask it anyway. What is your biggest financial mistake?
Yeah, I told you already.
Okay.
Credit card, right?
And they offered me two. And it was my friend. I think my credit was just so good. And they're like, there's £3,000 here. And then they were like, there's another one for £6,000.
Whoa.
I took out. Yeah. And it was just there.
Free money, right?
You never know how you pinch 100 here, 100 there.
That's right.
By the time I discovered Dave Ramsey, I'm like, what the hell? What have I got myself into?
I know. By the time I discovered Dave Ramsey, I had a $30,000 car loan and a $17,000 in credit card. So yeah.
Oh my God.
You know, we all been there.
At least when I hear the Dave Ramsey show, the only thing when I compare England to America, it's just that we don't have those student loans. Thank you, God. For that.
Oh man!
I hear the student loans. So cool. I'm like, okay, I don't have that problem. Thank you, God, for
it's
that.
I was watching this country.
This film, more like a documentary / reality film that he made. I was watching it the other day about student loans. This guy got over $1 million in student loan debt.
Mm-hmm.
His payments alone are $6,000 a month.
Oh dear. Yeah.
I'm glad that you guys don't have those student loans.
I also think
we don't do that over here. We do have student loans though for people born here, but it's just a different system. It's totally different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you pay it from your what's it called, from your wages. But before you pay, I think you have to earn £30,000 going up, and if you do, they take a percentage, and I think later it's forgiven or something. But but luckily for me, by the time when I was studying, I was a student Gambian, so I didn't even qualify for even that little loan, because those loans are like, then uni was like 3,000 a year, and later it was 6,000 a year. So uni is definitely cheaper over here than it is on the in the States. Way cheaper over here.
Wow. Well, yeah. I think, AJ, it all comes back to that, you know, that total compensation package that you are talking about. You know, she may think that, you know, she's making less.
Yeah,
right. But you know, somebody with the same degree over here, you know, is probably making more, but they're out here worrying about healthcare bills. They're out here worrying about that big, massive student loan, you know. Yep. So if you look at it, you know, the disposable income that you are taking home,
might be the same. Yeah.
Exactly.
And then again, the pound is mightier than the dollar.
So. That is true. That is true. You know, wow, man, this is so cool, man.
You didn't ask your travel questions this time.
Oh, wow.
Maybe because I scared him and said I'm a concert person. But he doesn't like music, I think.
Well, tell me your favorite travel or your favorite place that you would love to visit.
That I haven't visited yet.
That you haven't visited yet.
Oh, I'm dying to go to Italy.
Italy?
Me too.
Yeah, I want to go because of the food.
Oh, okay.
I want to go because I want to see the historical sites.
And, it's beautiful, I heard. And the buildings and the history and everything. Yeah, I want to go to Italy. Yeah, after France, I'm looking at going to Italy.
Wow. Italian food, huh?
But as I was telling Anna the other day, I can actually answer your question, Pa, as to why I didn't go to all these places. As a single woman, it's kind of scary. We just don't up and go.
That
so Anna didn't tell me. So sometimes we do have the money and we have everything, but are you prepared to go? Just yet? You have to plan it. Yeah,
that is true. That is true. I agree with that.
Oh yeah, because I was saying that it'd be probably easier, and Pa was talking about I think we were texting about this.
Yeah, because
I was thinking about the safety part, you know,
right?
And Pa was thinking about your wife letting you, giving you permission to go.
Yeah, so it's the safety part for us, the ladies.
Yeah.
For you guys, it's easy. I'm sure you don't even think about that. You just say, "I'm going somewhere," and you pick up your bags and go.
Right.
But we're talking about all sorts, because recently on Twitter, at the beginning of the year, there was this girl, I think, where was she from? I can't remember. She's African. She went to a safari by herself in Kenya or whatever happened. Like a real case, the police were involved. She went to the hotel and she was sleeping. She woke up and saw a man in the bed with her. Like one of the men that walked in the hotel. Yeah, it was a big police case. And just the shock of it all. Oh my God. I couldn't even think. I couldn't even breathe when she said it.
Yeah.
So that's why we're scared to go to unknown territory.
Yeah, that's why Anna's vision of having this group travel together is so amazing.
That would be nice.
If Anna
ever did that, I did write to her. I said, if you ever did that, I'll be one of your first customers.
Yes, me too.
Because it's gonna be like a sisterhood thing. Yeah, it's gonna be nice.
Yeah, she says she will do one that will involve the men also. So I'm kind of
but the women first before the men.
The women
right?
first, but that's okay.
Yeah, this is fun, man. Looks like we talked about everything that we went from money, pensions, healthcare, mental well-being, and everything all in the same episode. This is really fun to have you on this podcast.
Awesome. It's awesome.
Well, yeah,
if people
so
want to know more about you, you talked about you're very active on Twitter and other social media.
If you really want to see me, you have to come on Twitter. If you send me a message on Facebook, it might take some time before I see. But if you came on Twitter, I'd see Mark Chongad and I'll be there. And I'm inviting Fa and Abu to come. To come on Twitter for the new year, that should be your
resolution. I would definitely take on that
to get on Twitter, huh? Okay, I don't have an account yet, but I mean, I will just probably sign on just to see what you are up to in Twitter.
I did have an account.
Exactly.
But...
I've been tweeted about our podcast today. So you.
Oh, you did?
Oh, really?
Oh, that's good.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's all right.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well,
we would have to get your Twitter and put it on the show notes here.
Okay.
As well.
Okay, now I'm definitely signing up for a Twitter account. So how does it work? Do I have to follow you, or do I have to send you a friend request or any of that stuff?
So you just sign up and then I will tell. And if you search for me, either you go by searching for Mam Chongan or you go by searching for Linger at Linger23, you will see me. And probably once you or Abu AJ follow me, then... Once you follow me, you will see my friends, and probably this is where all your Gambian crew would be, or what we are doing with organizations and things like that.
Nice. I'll check it out for sure.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Well, Mam Oli, it's been fun. You know, I mean, this is my first time talking to you, and I feel like I've known you for so long, and you know,
I know.
Yeah. So I am really excited. So.
Yeah, this is definitely fun. Thank you so much for coming on and giving us
send
this.
Send my regards to Mariama and the kids. I miss her
right.
so much.
We'll definitely do
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, you take care.